Would you like for us to post information about your congregation on the Find a Church page of our website? We'll add your church when it becomes part of the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to donate $1,000 to Issues Etc. Please consider adding the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. to your church's mission or advertising budget. Find out more about the Issues Etc. 300 at issuesetc.org. Click Promote and publicize your congregation to the world.
Only marriage between a man and a woman is valid and recognized in California.
We respect the court's decision, and you know, I think that you know, this is not over.
Stay straight, black, white. Marriage is a civil right.
I have decided to nominate an inspiring woman who I believe will make a great justice, Judge Sonia Sotomayor.
Mr. President, I greatly appreciate the honor you are giving me.
Of a little girl who's standing on the street corner, and a man walks up to her and says, "Little girl, have you found Jesus?" And she says, "I didn't know he was lost."
Thank you for providing theology for clerical collar, white collar, and blue collar.
It's a difficult thing to define, and partly because American evangelicalism has, over the last 30, 40 years, almost defined itself out of existence, at least theologically. If you look at the thing as a theological movement, it started out fairly robust in the Protestant tradition, but then, as I said, began to define itself out of existence. The tenets of American evangelicalism theologically became fewer and fewer until it's hard to find any at all, perhaps a kind of blanket adherence to the Bible in some sense as God's word. Jesus seems to be pretty important in the mix. But beyond that, it's hard to get any consensus among American evangelicals about what they're really all about. And has the evangel, that is the gospel, survived the movements of American evangelicalism? They've certainly been moving and shaking in the last 35 years. But in what direction? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Our call-in number for the next hour of the program, 1-877-623-6943. We're going to be talking with Dr. David Wells, 1-877-623-MYIE. Our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. talkback@issuesetc.org. Dr. David Wells is Distinguished Professor of Historical and Systematic Theology at Gordon-Conwell Theological Seminary. He's author of several books, including his latest, The Courage to be Protestant. Dr. Wells, welcome back.
Well, thank you so much, Todd.
It was back in 1993 that you wrote No Place for Truth. It was a pretty bare-knuckled assessment of American evangelicalism at the time. Have things improved at all in the last 16 years?
Well, thank you. What you describe is probably correct. When I wrote No Place for Truth, as one of my friends said to me after that book, there would be no place for Wells. And I was describing very clearly what I was seeing. But not a lot of other people appeared to be seeing the same things. But I would say today what back then, 15 to 20 years ago, what back then was in germinal seed form has now burst out into view. And I'm really, in a way, gratified, although I wish I weren't, at how many people now are beginning to say and to see the very things that I was writing about when I wrote No Place for Truth.
Well, I'm wondering, one of the most intriguing things that you point out, and it's been a sense of mine adhering to a traditional confessional Lutheran position, and in both doctrine and practice as a pastor in a Lutheran church body, a sense of mine for a long time, that the traditional church, as defined by those confessions, especially in the Reformation, is under attack. You, I was shocked to find in your book, say, yes, it is. Why and by whom?
Well, it undoubtedly is under attack, and lest people misunderstand the point here, let us agree. There are some traditional churches which are moribund, dying, should not be defended, and are on their way out of existence. Let's agree that that is the case. But the whole point, I think, in the attack on the traditional church is that traditional churches have defined their lives by the doctrine which they have believed. This is what has given definition to the life of that church. This is what explains what they do. This is at the core of their message. Their gospel message is a message of teaching, of doctrine about the person and the work of Christ, and about the necessity of faith, and that Christ did uniquely, did what no one else has ever done, that we need to entrust ourselves to him, and so on. This is what has defined the church and its message. The attack upon the traditional church is an attack upon the place of doctrine in defining the church, because what people have wanted is a free hand to develop this enterprise in the way they want for a consumer that they have in mind in order to become more successful. And many of them have indeed become most successful, if by that you are judging by numbers. There are huge mega churches, as you know, that have catered to a consumer, and the way they have catered is by holding doctrinal beliefs in abeyance. They have been almost concealed, so that somebody coming into this church would hardly know what the church believes. Now, this, I have to tell you, this is a strategic blunder of the first order, quite apart from the fact that it goes to the very heart of what Christian faith is about. But leaving that aside for a second, what these mega churches are discovering, because so many of them now are simply imploding, is that the very consumers whom they were seeking to entice by this non-doctrinal, non-particular sort of message are being despised by the consumers that they had wanted. These people come in one door, find that there is nothing particular about the church that they can't find somewhere else, and they go out the back door. Bill Hybels' study called Reveal, which was a study on his and a few other churches like his, was simply stunning. And it was stunning because he was the one who had initiated it. And what he found was that this whole approach had produced virtually nothing in the lives of the people who were coming to the church. But leaving aside the question of its effectiveness, the truth of the matter is that Christian faith is a counter-cultural message in the sense that it is saying that in the Christian gospel and in the Christ who is at the heart of that gospel, we are finding what cannot be found in ourselves or in our culture around us. It's not another 12-step program. It's not a self-help program. This is something unique to Christian faith, and it cannot be found in our culture. So if we lose that, then we've lost everything.
So to with just a few minutes here before we take our first break, Dr. Wells, you mentioned the Reveal study that the Willow Creek Association undertook. They were rather alarmed to discover that the longer people remained associated with them, the less satisfied they were with what Willow Creek was offering, and the deeper they grew in their Christian faith, at least by measurable accounts, the more they wanted more meaty biblical teaching from the Willow Creek staff. I'm intrigued what you make of Bill Hybels' solution, which was, well, you know, we're not going to feed these people with God's word. We're just going to have to teach them to feed themselves. He used the term self-feeders, and he seemed rather put out that people would want to be fed as sheep in a Christian church. Your assessment there with only about a minute before we take a break.
What he did was to roll out a new business plan to replace the failed business plan. It raises a question as to what the church is about. My answer, which I think is from the New Testament, is that the church is there to teach people to walk with God, to believe the truth that he has given. In this time in which we are living, this is more needed than ever, because living in the West, living in a society like ours, with all of its wonderful, magnificent opportunities and choices, nevertheless, is extremely difficult. And we need God's truth if we are to stand upright and survive.
Dr. David Wells is our guest. He's a distinguished professor of historical and systematic theology at Gordon-Conwell Theological Seminary. He's author of several books, including his latest, The Courage to Be Protestant. We're giving the book away to listeners with the best questions or comments. Our email address, talkback@issuesetc.org, and our phone number, 1-877-623-6943. 877-623-MYIE. To the best questions or comments, The Courage to Be Protestant by Dr. David Wells, our guest. When we come back, so what is the way back for American evangelicalism? Back to its Protestant and Reformation roots. Do we have to reinvent the wheel? We'll find out after this with Dr. David Wells.
That was just a dream. That's me in the corner. That's me in the spotlight. Losing my religion. Trying to keep.
Thanks to God's gift of the internet, people are listening to Issues Etc. around the world.
From Japan to Oslo, Norway, here is Simon. Simon, welcome.
Thank you. Yeah, I want to vote for Benny Hinn. My reason for doing so is because, well, Jesus, the second Adam, ascended to heaven, so I guess there's some truth to it.
Thank you very much. Apparently they have senses of humor in Norway. Thank you very much for listening in Norway.
Christ-centered, cross-focused talk radio for the world, Issues Etc.
Here's your chance to support Christian education in the inner city. You're invited to attend a banquet to help the children of Unity Lutheran School in East St. Louis. It's Thursday night, May the 28th, at the Crystal Garden Banquet Center in Edwardsville. Tickets are $12.50 per person or $100 for a table of eight. The cost of your ticket is tax-deductible and benefits Unity Lutheran School in East St. Louis. For more information, visit www.unityesl.org or call 618-874-6605.
A voice in the wilderness of American evangelicalism, you're listening to Issues Etc.
So what's the fad du jour at your church? Beth Moore, Rick Warren, post-emergent, pre-emergent, or some other move of the spirit that hasn't quite hit you yet? At the Brothers of John the Steadfast, we're kicking it old school. And by old school, I mean the 1580 Book of Concord. Check out our website for a list of confessional study groups, or if you have one at your congregation, you can let us know. www.steadfastlutherans.com.
Would you like to post your favorite Issues Etc. audio segments on your website or blog? Well, we've made it easy for you. Just go to the on-demand page of our website, issuesetc.org, click the embed green logo, and copy and paste the embed code on your website or blog. It's just like posting a YouTube video. Embed Issues Etc. audio on your website or blog today. We love our on-demand listeners. Old theology, new technology. issuesetc.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. Dr. David Wells is our guest. We're talking about the decline of American evangelicalism. Dr. Wells, let's talk about marketing. You have written extensively about this. Has the marketing approach for American evangelicals been a help or a harm to the enterprise of the gospel?
I would say it has been disastrous because what it has done has, if I can use the language, it has rebranded the meaning of Christian faith. It has taken, as it were, the old product and, in effect, transformed it so that it is now something entirely different. And we are increasingly seeing the consequences of this, not only in simple biblical illiteracy, because the Bible isn't taught, but in much more profound ways, that the whole understanding of a biblical worldview has simply disintegrated. If Barna's studies are correct, among the 18 to 23-year-old bracket, among those who claim to be born again, 1% has a biblical worldview. And I don't know if you saw the Pew study in which a majority of evangelicals believes that salvation can be found in other religions. Now, you know, if you just take these little little brief snapshots of the evangelical movement, something disastrous has befallen it. Now, I don't blame the marketers entirely for this, but a large degree of the blame falls on their shoulders because they have simply, in terms of numbers, they have moved a large part of the movement off in a direction which is simply destructive.
All right, then. I was reading through your book, and I was thinking to myself, my own church body, the Lutheran Church of Missouri Synod, sad to say, at least in its leadership and the kind of the leading lights there, have been coming to these approaches like marketing and the very things that have plagued evangelicalism for the last 35 years. They're just coming to this now, picking it up and saying, wow, this is just marvelous things, as it is proving disastrous for American evangelicals. What would you say to someone who says, look, this is the future, marketing ourselves, massaging and repackaging the message, and paring down our doctrinal distinctives to be of a broader appeal to the culture? How would you respond?
Well, I would respond by saying that every time Christian faith has tried to pare down its essential beliefs in order to accommodate itself to the culture, going back to the Old Testament narrative, but coming all the way down through history, every time this has happened, disaster has followed shortly thereafter. This is simply the old liberal mindset. The old classical liberals made their accommodations to high culture. Evangelicals are making it to popular culture. But the end result is going to be the same. And the end result is, in fact, what we see in the mainline denominations today, which are disintegrating. If people were really on the cutting edge, instead of 20, 30 years behind, as the people you're describing, if they were really on the cutting edge, what they would be able to see is that the whole marketing enterprise is disintegrating before our eyes, and the emergents are falling apart also, heading off into different directions because of their multiple accommodations to postmodern culture. But there is, however, and I think it's located in the 20s and 30s and 40s, there is today a rather amazing rekindling of a desire for the real thing, a desire for what you see at the time of the Reformation, and certainly what you have in the Apostle Paul in the New Testament. And the reason for it is that this is a segment of our population that on the one hand has been marketed to the death. So they don't want the gospel to be marketed to them again as another product. And on the other hand, what they're trying to get away from are the consequences of capitulation to the culture that they have seen in all of their friends. So they're looking for the real deal. I don't know if you saw Time magazine maybe 3 weeks ago. It listed 10 trends, and I think trend number 3 was what they called the new Calvinism. Well, it's not narrowly Calvinism. What it is a new seriousness among, I think, younger people, 20s, 30s, 40s, younger by my standards, who are looking for the real deal, and I think this is where our real future is.
Okay, you mentioned the emergent movement, or emergence, or emerging, that goes by various terms, but give us a brief introduction to this attempt to respond to classical liberalism and pop American Christianity, and why it is already, after only, less than 10 years, flying apart at the seams.
Yeah, well, this is really just another attempt at marketing, but The target audience is different. Bill Hybels and company marketed to the baby boomers. The emergents are really marketing to a younger generation, principally Generation X, and it has a different cultural mindset. The consequence of this is that when you get this amalgam, this translation of Christian faith into these cultural terms, it has a different look and feel to it from what you see in Hybels and Willow Creek and that whole movement. It reflects the generational shift and the different set of attitudes. And among emergents, what you have is an even slimmer doctrinal core, and a willingness to make cultural alliances of a different kind. This is the generation that has been most hurt by divorce and the stresses and strains of our home lives, which have only increased with the passing of the years. And so this generation is much more relational, much more clubby, if I can put it like that. They want to hang together. They put great stress on this. They therefore correspondingly do not like judgmental attitudes, what they call judgmental attitudes. They don't want anything that will intrude upon relationships. They will not therefore judge personal lifestyle issues. They won't judge homosexuality. To their credit, they are much more attuned to human suffering, but they are much less attuned to the potential of suffering beyond death, of which Scripture speaks. They just have an entirely different mindset, but by their very nature, they're not institution builders. They're trying to escape from the boundaries and the restrictions of doctrine. So they are pulling away from each other in a multitude of different directions, and some in their movement are already saying the movement's done. It's all over.
We're talking with Dr. David Wells, Distinguished Professor of Historical and Systematic Theology at Gordon-Conwell Theological Seminary. He's author of several books, including his latest, The Courage to be Protestant, Truth Lovers, Marketers, and Emergents in the Postmodern World. We're giving this book away to the listeners with the best questions or comments. Either give us a call, 1-877-623-6943,
877-623-MYIE, or you can email us right here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org, talkback@issuesetc.org. You can purchase The Courage to be Protestant under the on-demand page of our website as well, issuesetc.org. When we come back, one of the things that Dr. Wells points out in his book is the disappearance of the church. It is replaced, of course. The vacuum is never left empty. It is replaced, of course, in the minds of many American evangelicals with what is probably best called the parachurch. That is an organization that doesn't claim to be church, but in some ways fills the gap left by a church that has disappeared. And many churches, classical congregations, have been happy to either morph into a parachurch themselves or to let the parachurch swoop in and fill the gap that they are leaving there. But the last time I checked, according to Scripture, the church is not an optional institution, and it's not a human institution. It's a divine institution left here by Christ in His Word and sacraments that cannot be replaced. We'll talk more about that after this. Figure it out. They just sold me out for a few shekels more. Didn't even think twice for a few shekels more.
It's not about you. It's about Jesus for you. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
A giant belch. Did it really happen?
Answers with Ken Ham, author of the children's rhyme book, D is for Dinosaur.
According to an article in the journal Geology, a deadly burp of methane gas once came from deep in the ocean, and it's being blamed for wiping out much of life on the planet, supposedly some 250 million years ago. These researchers are predicting that it could happen again. They say there's enough methane in just 1% of the ocean to cause an explosion 10,000 times greater than if all the nuclear weapons were detonated at once. They concluded that just a local disturbance, such as an earthquake, could force methane to be released all at once from the ocean, causing this giant flammable burp and then some flooding. Scientists say that this might once again destroy most of the life on Earth. You know, there was no mass extinctions 250 million years ago. In fact, the world is not millions of years old anyway. But there was one mass extinction when almost all life on Earth died, the event of Noah's flood, recorded by the eyewitness who was there, our Creator God.
Our ministry has produced all sorts of DVDs on this fascinating topic of the real age of the Earth. For some great viewing, watch our new video by Dr. Terry Mortensen. A gift of any amount gets this wonderful video out to you. Call toll-free 1-888-89-ANSWERS. That's 888-89-ANSWERS. Or on the web at answersoffer.org. Answersoffer.org.
The leadership of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is proposing sweeping changes in structure and governance. These changes would further centralize power in the church's bureaucracy and decrease the voice of LCMS congregations and laity. Stay informed. Read the new broadcast transcripts on this subject. You'll find them at the top of the on-demand page at issuesetc.org. These transcripts are a must-read for every layperson and pastor in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. issuesetc.org. Click on demand. We're talking about the decline of American evangelicalism. Dr. David Wells is our guest. Dr. Wells, let's talk about, you make a point in your book that the churches have not so much declined as disappeared or been replaced, in a lot of cases, by the parachurch. What is the parachurch, and why can't it substitute for the churches we have known it for nearly two millennia?
Yes, and to that, one should also add by online communities. You know, this takes the whole process even one step further. In fact, all over America today, there are people who not only don't go to their church that they once went to, they don't even go to a small group with live people, but they simply go online to these virtual communities. Well, very quickly, this, I believe, is what's happened. First, When evangelicals came together after the Second World War to try to put together a working coalition of believers, they reduced the core that had to be believed to some essentials, and freedom was given around those essentials. What has happened with the passing of time is that those essentials have become even fewer, and they've become more slender. They've lost their substance and depth with the passing of the years. This is not true of everybody, but this is just a general tendency. So that's the first thing that happened. The second thing that happened is this, that evangelicals took what had been a distinction at the Reformation, a very proper distinction, and they ran with it. The distinction was between the church visible and invisible. The church invisible is that fellowship of all true believers who have trusted in Christ solely for their salvation by grace alone, through faith alone. It is a fellowship that stretches across the ages. The visible church is those who gather together Sunday by Sunday for worship, proclamation, the sacraments, witness. An evangelical said, now, of these two, which is more important? Well, of course, it is the invisible church. And so they put all of their eggs in this basket. In time, so much of the evangelical effort went into this, into the pursuit of ministries that were gospel ministries, because they wanted to build the invisible church. And the visible church, by comparison, shrank. What happened then was that as local churches faltered and stumbled sometimes and didn't do the things that they should have been doing, structures and organizations popped up alongside them to do what the churches should have been doing but hadn't been doing. Now, a very good illustration of that is the Bible Study Fellowship. In the churches, the Bible was not being effectively preached and taught and learned, and BSF came alongside the churches and started doing this very effectively and had a wonderful ministry. But in the early post-war years, parachurch organizations functioned, as it were, within the church. They were for the church. They didn't look on themselves as having an independent life. What began to happen in the 70s and 80s, as the entrepreneurs became prominent in evangelicalism, and as the whole business model took over, these parachurch organizations became a thing unto themselves. They became business enterprises. They went out to get financing in the evangelical world. They lived for themselves. And increasingly, evangelicals gave their time and attention to the parachurch organizations, and their interest in the local church diminished. And then in the final stage of evolution, they moved on, many of them, onto the Internet. I don't know if Barner is right, but he projects that within a short period of time, a few years, 80% of evangelicals will get their spiritual sustenance online.
So, is it the beginning or perhaps the first years of a post-evangelical era? When we say the word evangelical now, are we uttering in nonsense?
I think that we are at the end of what has been quite an extraordinary story, and extraordinarily good in many ways. But I think that we are now at the end. I think it is disintegrating. I think you will see happening, if it hasn't already, what happened last century. Don't forget that the classical liberal Protestants were all born in evangelical homes. And then they encountered the modern world. Typically, it was in university where they came face to face with Darwin and some of the other intellectual challenges. And they made their peace with the modern world. And today, what is happening, I think, is that coming out of the loins of evangelicalism, we are giving birth to a new nascent liberal Protestantism, and you see it in particular in the emergence. So I see this as the end of a chapter, and what I am looking for and hoping for is the birth, the beginnings of a new movement that will draw together serious-minded, biblically focused, Christ-honoring evangelicals from the current time, and perhaps we can redo the story all over again, but without what in fact has become baggage on the evangelical world.
So, folks, what do you think about the state of American evangelicalism? Our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943. We're talking with Dr. David Wells, 877-623-MYIE, or talk back at issuesetc.org. Listeners with best questions or comments, we'll get Dr. Wells' book, The Courage to be Protestant. Steve is listening in St. Louis. Hi, Steve.
Hi, how you doing?
Very well.
Good. A couple of observations. First of all, I think one of the problems is that with the advent of these non-denominational churches, you see the minimalization of theology at best, if not the discarding. And what they do is they replace theology with marketing. And that goes to his point about everybody being marketed too. I think what happens is then these parachurches organizations are filling the void that the church have done, because they're trying to do that theological void that churches had avoided, because, again, the avoidance of wanting to have the theological differences that define Lutherans or Presbyterian Calvinists, et cetera. So.
Steve, thank you very much. What do you make of his observations, Dr. Wells?
I think his observation's right on target. If you think back, and maybe some of the people who are listening can't think back 30, 40 years because they're too young, but I can think back to that time, and I remember how important theology was to evangelicals. Indeed, it was so important that we sometimes had difficulty reining in our passions over our differences. Today, you know, you're hard-pressed to find people like that. What divides us today, and I'm speaking here in general, what divides us today is not so much doctrinal differences as differences in the way in which we appropriate culture. Now, part of our culture is, of course, that we are consumers. Our world is filled with marketing. And so one of our differences is, what do you make of this marketing? How much can you use? Should we use it in the church? This is where our debates are. But the underlying debate that we really should be having is the point that's just been made. It is about the nature of Christian truth with respect to the person of Christ, with respect to the nature of the gospel, to fallen human nature, to human destiny, to faith and grace. These are the things that are the bedrock discussions that we really need to be having if the church is to survive.
We're going to talk more about that on the other side of the break. Dr. David Wells is our guest. We'll also get to your email as well. Some final questions for Dr. Wells. Does he expect megachurches that have marketed themselves into this current position to follow the mainline Protestant liberal denominations on moral issues? And how ironic is it that the church has not succumbed by persecution or suppression, but by surrender, capitulation, and accommodation to the culture? We'll be right back. June 30th marks the one-year anniversary of the return of Issues Etc., and we'd like to celebrate this milestone with you. You're invited to an open house at the studio and office of Lutheran Public Radio beginning Tuesday afternoon at 4 on June the 30th. Food, friendship, and fun. RSVP to Craig at issuesetc.org. We hope to see you here in Collinsville, Illinois on Tuesday, June the 30th. RSVP to Craig at issuesetc.org.
Would you like for us to post information about your congregation on the Find a Church page of our website? We'll add your church when it becomes part of the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to donate $1,000 to Issues Etc. Please consider adding the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. to your church's mission or advertising budget. Find out more about the Issues Etc. 300 at issuesetc.org. Click promote and publicize your congregation to the world.
Real Reformation Radio. You're listening to Issues Etc.
We at NewReformationPress.com are committed to providing a hand-picked selection of books and teaching materials that educate, inform, and entertain while relentlessly focusing on the gospel. Discover our growing library of resources by Dr. Rod Rosenblatt of the White Horse Inn radio program, including his powerful address, The Gospel for Those Broken by the Church, or Bible in an Hour by Pastor Wade Butler. And be sure not to miss our selection of t-shirts, gifts, and artwork. NewReformationPress.com. Finally, Reformation theology made accessible.
We're going to launch an online version of the Issues Etc. Journal on June the 1st. And you can subscribe by sending your name and email address to journal@issuesetc.org. Do Christians make progress in their good works? I've written an article for the new online journal titled Sheep Don't Keep Track. You'll also find an article detailing Pastor George Borghardt's journey from Catholicism to Lutheranism. Get your copy of the Issues Etc. Journal by sending your name and email address to journal@issuesetc.org.
You can stand me up at the gates of hell, but I won't back down. No,
we're talking about the decline of American evangelicalism. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Dr. David Wells is our guest. Coming up on June 30th, we're going to celebrate a one-year anniversary here at Lutheran Public Radio. Issues Etc.'s one-year return to the air. June 30th, that's a Tuesday. And starting at 4 o'clock that afternoon, we'd like to invite you, our listeners, to come out and celebrate with us, first by watching the show being done live, and then to join us for some food, some friendship, and just a little reminiscence about the one-year anniversary of the return of Issues Etc. It's Tuesday, June the 30th, starting at 4 o'clock, right here at the studios of LPR in Collinsville, Illinois. Now, you need to RSVP or any questions you may have about how to get here. We need to know how many you're going to bring when you come. RSVP to Craig at issuesetc.org, Craig at issuesetc.org. It's the one-year anniversary of our return to the air, Tuesday, June the 30th, beginning at 4 o'clock here at LPR Studios in Collinsville, Illinois. Our call-in number 1-877-623-6943 or talk back at issuesetc.org. Ken in Orlando, Florida, emails us. He says, "What will happen to the church that has courted the culture when that culture turns against it with intolerance and persecution?" Dr. Wells.
Well, as a famous English churchman said, he who is married to the spirit of the age today will be a widow tomorrow. And that's what's going to happen. If we court and marry the spirit of our own age, what we're going to find is it's quickly going to move on. And the favor that we might have been granted today might very well turn to hostility tomorrow. But in any case, even if it doesn't, we will be judged irrelevant as a new cultural mood moves through the nation.
Rebecca in Michigan emails us. She says, are most of us lay people too ill-equipped to rein in some of the marketing tendencies of the church? Who will have to do the heavy lifting for gaining biblical knowledge? If it will be the ordained ministers, where have they been? Your response, Dr. Wells.
I think she asks a wonderful question. Where have the ordained ministers been? I think it's very hard for lay people to see the situation and to know exactly what to do. Indeed, I don't know what to do except to try my best to describe what's happening and hope that maybe somebody somewhere will listen. But it's very hard to put the brakes on this train because it seems to be, has seemed to be, so successful. There are, as you know, churches that are of mammoth size that have become so with very little or even no reference to Christian truth. And I would say that Joel Osteen's church is a prime example. So how do you put the brakes on this? How do you alert people to it? Unless people really want to know the truth and want to pursue the God of that truth, they will be seduced by almost anything.
How far will American evangelicalism, as long as it continues to survive institutionally, how far will it follow the culture? We know that classical kind of mainline Protestant liberalism has been willing to follow the culture up till this point, wherever the culture leads. We have the Episcopal Church USA with openly homosexual bishops and gay marriage and all the other things, and who knows what's coming next. Do you expect that the megachurch movements that have marketed themselves so successfully, as you say, to the culture, will they follow so far?
Let me just make a small distinction. There are some megachurches which have become large, but not by marketing themselves. And the difference is that the churches that I'm talking about are large because they have made known up front their nature as biblical, doctrinal, believing churches. They haven't tried to hide that in the interests of reaching consumers. So there is that little distinction. But in answer to your question, the marketing megachurches, I think, actually are in a real bind right now. If you look at some of the studies that have been done of their pastors, most of them still think of themselves as being orthodox in an evangelical kind of way. If you ask most of them whether they believe in the divinity of Christ or his saving work on the cross, they wouldn't dispute or deny it, most of them. But when you go into their churches, that is not what you hear. Or if you hear it, it is in such disguised ways because they're trying to appeal to consumers. Now, I think they are in a real bind because the method that they have adopted is simply death on Christian faith. So they've got to make a choice, and I think the choice is now upon them, and I think Bill Hybels' study only pointed this up. The time to choose has come. Either they go the marketing way, in which case there is nothing to stop any compromise at all, or they turn back and recover their true biblical identity.
Joe in St. Louis has a question about Christian education. He says, what has been the impact of these trends on our Christian schools, and what is the remedy to combat these influences?
Well, of course, some of our Christian schools are trying to train kids to think Christianly about their world, Christianly and biblically, in a way that you don't see in the typical mega church. So some of our Christian schools are, by their very nature, sort of countercultural, both in terms of the culture and the evangelical world. But for those young people who are growing up in these mega churches, I can tell you that they are biblically and morally illiterate. When Christian Smith did his recent study on them, he summed it up by saying, and he researched a wide swath of young people in churches of an evangelical kind, and he said that their belief is in a theism, that is to say that God never interferes in this life, which is of a therapeutic kind. They're just interested in internal healing, and they don't have rules in their lives. So that's where we're headed.
With only 30 seconds, then, is the way forward really, in fact, the way back? That is, a return to the classical assertions, beliefs, and tenets of the Protestant Reformation? 30 seconds, Dr. Wells.
The way forward is the way back, but not simply to arid beliefs. These beliefs we have to make our own. We have to feel their weight and their depth. We have to hold them in the tension that is always there in relationship to our culture. These have to be ours in the presence and the face of God.
Folks, when you purchase The Courage to be Protestant using the Amazon.com link at our website, a percentage of your purchase will help support Issues, etc. Just visit issuesetc.org, click On Demand, and look for The Courage to be Protestant by Dr. David Wells. He's Distinguished Professor of Historical and Systematic Theology at Gordon-Conwell Theological Seminary, author of several books, including The Courage to be Protestant. Dr. Wells, it's always a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Rebecca in Michigan, Steve in St. Louis, send us an email with your mailing address, and we'll send you the book, The Courage to be Protestant. Thanks to everybody who called and who emailed as well. The way forward is the way back. It always has been. We are recalled by the apostles to their teachings, and the earliest church spends the better part of its time recalling the teachings of the apostles, the way back. To what? Well, it's the way back to the heart and center, the living, vital, the beating heart of the Christian faith and of the church itself. The way back to Christ and his cross. Would that evangelicalism lived up to its name. Men and women of the gospel. But one of the first casualties in evangelicalism's attempt to find success in the eyes of the world, and boy have they found success in the eyes of the world, one of the first casualties was the gospel itself. It had to go. And so when you walk into many of those churches, you simply will not hear it sung, prayed, preached, or even mentioned. It's considered a scandal. Well, that's because it is. It's a stumbling block. And yet it is the only message that saves a lost and condemned world, the message of Christ's perfect life, death, and resurrection for us. And the way forward for the church is always the way back to Christ and his cross, to the bold proclamation and confession of Christ and of his apostles, of the church as it has stood the test of time and against the gates of hell, because of that confession of Jesus Christ crucified for a world of sinners, and as the only hope for that world. Now, the church will survive. Make no mistake about it. Evangelicalism may have already fallen and may already be nothing more than dust. But Christ's promise, the gates of hell will not prevail, remains for the true church as it continues to confess Christ. I'm Todd Wilkin. Talk with you again tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Issues, Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.